We're in 1 Samuel near the blue ribbon. That's right, I got a blue ribbon. If you ain't got a blue ribbon, you're in the wrong book. There you go. And I'm glad this is a very short verse, chapter. But on the other hand, I'm going to go right into number 2, so don't get your feelings all excited. He's going to preach short and that's it. No. But I will say that here's the two chapters that a lot of people would say that there's discrepancy in the Bible. People would say in chapter 31 that he was falling on his sword, and in chapter 1 they say, and he leaned on his spear. But we've got to remember that we have a lion Amalekite in chapter 1 of the next book, who's given the story his way. So, the fact is that Saul dies in this chapter, and he's going to be graveyard dead. Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. So they started out fighting in the valley. They started out fighting. They all come together. But unless you got something in your heart to fight for, undoubtedly these Philistines had more heart to fight than the Israelites did. And it says the Israelites fled. And when you turn your back on the enemy, you leave yourself wide open. Because if you've ever heard about the armor of God, it covers your front. There ain't a whole lot on your back. So these men, they fled, and they were afraid. And it says they fell down slain. In other words, they were dead. Wounded and dead all the way to Mount Gilboa, except for the ones that totally kept running and got out of Dodge. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul. Now you reckon they knew Saul by his armor, by his chariot, by his armor bearer. They knew him, they picked him out, and he says, there's the man. There was one war that where the guy says, you fight against Ahaz and him only. That's who we're going to take out. Well, the same thing basically happened right here. These Philistines says, there's Saul. And the archers, those are the guys with them bows and arrows that could shoot an arrow 100 yards out there. And they had them big bows so they could really stretch out. The archers followed hard after Saul. In other words, they says, I ain't worried about this one, I ain't worried about that one. We're going to kill Saul. We're after Saul. You reckon God might be wrapping things up for Saul, saying, I have taken the kingdom away from you. Pretty soon I'm going to set David on the throne. But before that happens, because David won't touch you, and we don't want David to touch you, but before anybody touches you, I'm going to take care of this. Let's say, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. His day came. It says, and the archers followed hard after him, after Saul, and upon his sons. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. Seems like the righteous die right along beside the unrighteous. We understand that Jonathan was a righteous man. Jonathan was a good man, but you got to think about this. If Jonathan had lived, the Benjamites would have wanted him on the throne. Even if David became on the throne, every time they turned around, the Benjamites would say, we're going to assassinate David, we're going to do whatever it takes. Because when we get into the next book, we're going to find out that the Benjamites tried to start a kingdom all by themselves again, and they had war with David for a long time. It says here that the Philistines slew Jonathan. And we don't know a lot about Abinadab, but they slew him also, and Malchishua, Saul's sons. But there was one son that's left, and we understand that he becomes king over to Israel as soon as Saul dies. And now we have David king and him king, and then we have the fighting going on. But it says here, and the battle went sore against Saul. In other words, he wasn't winning. He was losing so bad, and it was such a loss. The battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him. Now, it doesn't say exactly where they hit him, but it wasn't enough to kill him instantly, but it was enough to make him worry that he's going to die. He knows he's going to die. He's been grievously wounded, and they hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. And he said, now, he's made it all the way back to Mount Gilboa. No, he's run too. He's not down in the valley. He's on Mount Gilboa. That's where he finally ends up at. And he says, and Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me." He's sitting here, I'm hurt bad. In fact, I don't know that I'm going to make it, but I'm still alive enough that I don't want them to catch me. I don't want them to torture me and give me a terrible death and whatever else they might do with me because I'm the king of Israel. You can just have ungodly thoughts about what all they might could have done to him. He says, before they can mistreat me in this life, armor bearer, take your sword out and thrust me through. And the armor bearer said, he would not. He says, I won't touch the anointed. I won't help you make it into the afterlife. I will not help you get out of here without being, I'll stand here and fight for you till I'm killed, if that's necessary, but I won't thrust you through with the sword. Therefore Saul took a sword and he fell upon it. Well, if I can't get you to help me out, I'll just commit suicide. You say, well, he was about to die. Yeah, but he wasn't dead. So he grabs his sword, turns it around, puts the hilt upon the ground, and he falls upon it, and he kills himself. God had rejected him. Everything around him had rejected him. And now even in death, he doesn't get to have a good death. He commits suicide. And he fell upon it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, this man must have really loved Saul. He must have really cared about him. He says, first of all, he might have said, if I don't fall dead with him, they're going to blame me for what happened to him or not taking care of him. But he says he must have really, I think he really loved the man. He cared about the man. He says, but when his armor bearer saw that he was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and he died with him. He says, if my leader's going to die, if Israel's going to lose, to save face, I'm going down with him. And he fell upon his sword and he died with him. He may even fell upon the same sword. He might have just fell right on top of Saul. Because I guarantee that sword went all the way through him. He may have just fell on the very same sword. I don't know. But he died likewise with him. And then the Bible says, and Saul died. So Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together. Well, we know absolutely all men didn't die because they scattered out all over the place. But there was a pretty good chunk of the army right there that died on Mount Gilboa. They turned tail, they ran, and as they were running, those archers are steady, shoo, shoo, shoo. And they picking them off like flies. A whole pile of them died there that day. And they all fell together. That's a heap of dead folks. And when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley, these weren't in that midst of that same fight, but they were over on the other side of the valley. And they that were on the other side of Jordan, so we got some people over here, we got some people over there, and they both looking down at this thing going on, seeing what's happening at Mount Gilboa and seeing Saul dying, or at least thinking he's dead, at least thinking that Jonathan's dead, at least thinking his son, brothers are dead. He says, when they saw from the other side of the valley, the men of Israel fled, and Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and they fled. So the ones in the midst of this battle, they died. But the folks who were watching from over here, and the folks that were watching from over here, if you have ever read those Civil War stories, they'd be in the midst of battle. The North would be over here, the South would be over here. And there'd be people having picnics on each side watching this going on. And having parties and whatever, festival and all that else. Well, these guys are dying brutally out there in the middle of this field. And see the ones on this side, watching the ones on this side. And they see all these folks that are dying and dead. And they realized out of all this, if Saul is dead, and if his sons are dead, we have no hope. And they also fled and left the cities. And the Philistines came that dwelt in them. And the Philistines came and dwelt in them. They took the cities over. They took them back. And it came to pass on the morrow. So all night long the Philistines stayed at home. They partied and had a good old time thinking about, man, we've whooped them all, killed them all, and all this. But on tomorrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. They didn't even realize technically that they had got them killed till the next morning. When they come up there and say, we're going to go pick the gold and the silver and the jewels and all that stuff off all these dead guys, take all their stuff away from them. And then all of a sudden they say, wow, we got Saul. There he is. The hope of Israel is dead. And look, there's Jonathan and his brothers. He says, man, they figured out they had killed him. And then he says, and they cut off his head. I remember David cut off a head. Yeah, of a Philistine. So they might have been trying to get a little payback here. And they cut off his head, and they stripped off his armor. And I'm guessing they probably did more than that. And they set it into the land of the Philistines. Now, I'm thinking that they took his head to the temple of Dagon, and they hung it right in that temple where all the people, when they passed by, because I don't think they carried it all up and down every street there in the Philistines, but they probably sent messengers all over town saying, we done killed Saul. And oh, by the way, if you'd like to see his head to prove it, it's down here at the temple. Come on down to Dagon's and we'll look at it. Doesn't actually say that in the text, but I'm sure that's where they ended up with it, at the temple. And they cut off his head and they stripped off his clothes. And they sent it to the land of the Philistines round about to publish it in the house of their idols among the people. So they went to all their preaching places where they had all their false idols and their false gods and everything, and they proclaimed, we have whipped Saul, we have whipped Israel, we have whipped, and if you want to say it, they whipped God. That's what they would think. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, which is one of their pagan gods, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. Now, they may have fastened him actually to the wall there, or they may have built one of them gizmos that you hang people on and put it right beside the wall. But anyways, they had him out there, what was left of him, without his head, on this rack, nailed to a wall, that everybody that could walk by could see him and say, that was the king of Israel. Notice, that was the king of Israel. Look how we have whipped Israel. Look how we have put them to shame. Now, you remember there was a city way back when Saul first became king. And so another bunch of wicked people came up to that city and says, you'll either serve us or we'll pluck out all your eyes. Well, that city just came back up. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard that which the Philistines had done to Saul, in other words, they heard by word of mouth all the bad things that had happened to Saul, but Saul went and saved them that morning. Saul went and saved every one of them from that other group so they wouldn't lose all their eyes. And all the valiant men rose and went all night. They had to travel a pretty good piece. Went all night. And while them Philistines were still partying and sleeping and getting drunk or whatever they were doing, they took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshean and came to Jabesh and burnt them there. Now the reason they burnt them there, some people say, you don't need to be cremated or whatever. The reason they burnt these guys is because these guys are going to come hunting them bodies. And if they find them, not only are they going to kill these people from Jabesh Gilead, but they're going to do some more damage to these bodies. So they says, if we burn these bodies, then there's nothing for them to come brutalize or do anything with. And they took these bodies and they burnt them, and they took their bones and they buried them under an oak tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. They put these bones under a tree because the Jewish people were good about planting. They'd always put their bodies near oak trees or some kind of high tree, something like that. But these guys fasted for 7 days. They burnt the body so nobody could come back and re-get the body and rehang it back up and make more fun of it or whatever. So they jeopardized their lives. They remembered what Saul had done for them back when they had all says, we'll serve you. Tomorrow we'll let you put out our eyes, one or the other. And the king says, well, about noontime, y'all come on out. Well, about noontime, Saul and everybody in the world come piling down on them. And he whipped them. The one good thing Saul ever did is he saved Jabesh Gilead. And they remembered. They remembered. Now we see Saul is dead. Jonathan's dead. His other two brothers are dead. It's a sad time in Israel. The king is gone. Now it came to pass after the death of Saul. Now we don't know exactly how many days or if it was the next day or what after. But it says it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites. You remember them Amalekites that had stole all their families and all their stuff from the slaughter of Amalekites. David had abode 2 days in Ziklag. Now, undoubtedly, all of Ziklag didn't get burnt to the ground. There was still some place there where you could stay, pitch a tent, or do something. So he stayed there for a couple of days. And it came even to pass on the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes rent, and earth upon his head. And so it was when he came to David that he fell to the earth and did obeisance. So here this guy, 3 days after the battle, he comes to David. He bows down to the ground. He says, I got some tidings for you. I got some news for you. David knows something's up because he sees this guy with his clothes all rent. He sees this guy with dust all over his head. And David said unto him, from whence comest thou? That's a good question. Where you come from? What you been up to? What's happening with you? From whence comest thou? And he said unto him, out of the camp of Israel I am escaped. Wait a minute. I'm not a traitor. I'm not a... didn't desert or anything else, but I am escaped out of the camp of Israel. In other words, well, I was running as hard as I could run to get away, and I managed to escape from that battle. I'm out of that camp. I am escaped. And David said to him, how went the matter? Being that you ran out and run off and all this, tell me about this thing. How did it go? In other words, he's inquiring as, how's Saul? But before he's worried about Saul, I bet he's saying, how's Jonathan? My friend Jonathan, what's up with him? What has happened? Is he still well? Is he still okay? And he said to him, out of the camp of the Israelites, I escaped. And David said to him, how went the matter? I pray thee, tell me. And he answered, that the people are fled from the battle. Man, they all turn tail and run. They all cowered down. They all chickened out. They fled from the battle. And many of the people also are fallen and dead. In other words, there's a pile of them that's wounded, and there's a pile of them that are dead. They didn't make it. And the very last thing he says, and Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also. So he breaks the news to him sort of in a roundabout. The people fled and the people are dead. And oh, by the way, Saul and Jonathan are dead also. And the young man that told him said, As I happened, by chance upon Mount Gilboa. You know, I was just strolling along, minding my own business, happened to be on Mount Gilboa. Really? Behold, Saul leaned on his spear. He's sitting there leaning on his spear, leaning on his sword. He's got his coat of mail on, most likely, so the story might go. And lo, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. I'm sitting there watching this going on. He's leaning on his sword in his chariot, and they're following after him hard. And when he looked behind him, he saw me. He's trying to lean on that sword, and he says, he looked behind me, saw me, and he called unto me, and I answered, here am I. So, general, oh yeah, I'm all at your service, king. What you need? I see you bleeding half to death right now. What do you need? Here am I. And I answered him, I am an Amalekite. Well, naturally, Saul would never ask an Amalekite to help finish him off. The Amalekites are God's hated people. The Amalekites are the ones that come up and whip God's people from the rear and got all the weak and the feeble and all that. The Amalekites are the one that Saul was supposed to totally destroy. There's no way that he would have went to an Amalekite and says, would you finish me off, please? That's not going to happen. This story has holes all in it. He says, I am an Amalekite. And he said unto me again, stand, I pray thee, upon me. In other words, put your weight on top of me so that this spear will actually penetrate through me and kill me. Stand upon me and slay me, for anguish has come upon me because my life is yet whole in me. In other words, I am still alive, and yet I know that this wound that I have from these archers is going to kill me, and yet I want to be dead before they get here because of what they might do to me, to embarrass me, to make shame of me. And he tells us, Amalekite, why don't you stand upon me so that this sword will actually push on through? For I am in anguish. I'm hurting. And yet I'm not grievously dead yet. I'm not so past that I can't feel anything or see anything. My life is whole in me. So I stood upon him. Yeah, I just stepped right up on top of him. But I don't think the sword went through. I think he stood upon him and he pulled out his sword and he stabbed him from behind. Because he was an Amalekite. He hated Saul. He hated Israel. Now, he may have been a proselyte. He may have been one that was in the army there. But and his mom or dad, one was an Amalekite, and he knew what Saul had done to his family back down the road. He says, I stood upon him and slew him, because I was sure that he could not live after that he was fallen. In other words, I just helped him out. You know, he was run over in the road. He got an arrow sticking through him, and I just didn't want to see him suffer and be in all that pain. David and, you know, the bad guys were going to come and they were going to abuse him, and I couldn't stand to see that happen. So I just shoved my sword right on through him, took him right on out, made him feel better, and I took the crown that was on his head. And the bracelet that was on his arm, and have brought them hither unto my Lord. In other words, before they could get all the royal apparel, I went ahead, and undoubtedly he went there that night because they went the next morning. While I was up there, I just went ahead and took the crown off his head and the bracelet off his arm. And oh, by the way, I'm bringing them to you as a gift, because I know how Saul tormented you, and I know how Saul was against you, and he's sitting here, I maybe could get a little good grace going on here with David for bringing him this nice crown, this nice jewelry, and this nice stuff. He says, I took the crown off his head and the bracelet off his arm, And I brought it to my Lord. And David took hold of his clothes and rent them. He was mourning. He was grieved. Even though Saul had treated him bad, even though Saul had chased him all over the world, Saul was God's anointed. And even if it wasn't for Saul, he had rent his clothes for Jonathan's sake. Because Jonathan loved him as a brother. He closed and he rent them, and likewise, all the men that were with him, they understood what was going on. If David's sad, if David's upset. We're sad. And all the men that were with him, and they mourned and they wept and fasted until evening. I got a little thing about fasting here. I've been doing a little studying on that. We think that people fasted, they fasted day and night. But technically, when they fasted throughout the day. They might eat a little something at night, but when morning came, they fasted again and they didn't eat during the day. These men fasted until evening. If you notice what it says there. And at evening, they ate a little bit. There's several other times you'll see where David fasted till evening, and after evening, he ate a little bit. He says, and they fasted until even for Saul and for Jonathan his son and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword. In other words, this just wasn't a man fell down. This was a whole bunch of stuff. This was Israelites dying. This was the people of God dying. This was Jonathan dying. This was his brothers dying. This was the king dying. So they fasted and they wept and they cried and they mourned because Israel had taken a great blow. That was a great defeat. And David said to the young man that told him, he asked him again, said, let me make sure I got this straight. Whence art thou? Maybe in my grief and all, I didn't understand. You said you're a what? An Amalekite? Whence art thou? Maybe I didn't quite get the story right. Whence art thou? And he answered, I am the son of a stranger and Amalekite. Right then and there, David's heart just boiled up within him. He says, you're a what? And you did what? And you brought me the who? And David said unto him, how wast thou not afraid to stretch forth thine hand and destroy the Lord's anointed? Did it not give you goosebumps or scare you to death to even think about just touching this man? And yet you're going to come to me and say you took and you helped him commit suicide, and then you took the crown off his head, the crown that God placed there, and you took the bracelet off his arm that God gave him, and you brought them to me? What are you thinking? What did you think would happen? Did you think I would just hug you and kiss you and love you? Was thou not afraid? Do you remember that David's heart smote him just to cut the skirt off of his clothes? His heart smote him just to take the spear and the thing of water, the cruse of water by his head. And this man has helped him kill himself. And David says, how was thou not afraid? How did you not understand what you were doing? Did you know that you're touching God's man? You have destroyed the Lord's anointed? And David said, and David called one of his young men and said, go near and fall upon him. That don't mean just lay on top of him. That means take your sword out and you jump on top of him and you keep stabbing until he don't move no more. You get all over him. Fall upon him, and he smote him that he died. He didn't grievously wound him. He killed him dead right there on the spot. Now, I want you to understand that way back in the day, kings and generals could do that, have a guy executed on the spot, but that was not the norm. Even if a testimony was of himself, a man could have been out of his mind or whatever. Even in the Old Testament law, it says that a man has to have, you have to have at least two witnesses to put a man to death, and you can't be your own witness by yourself, because you might have lost your marbles, or you might have been on a heat stroke or something like that. But David kills this man on his own testimony. Of course, he does have the crown, and he does have the bracelet to go with it as witness. But there's only one witness there against what he did, and that was him. And David had him smote on the spot. David had him killed on the spot. And David said unto him, of course, this is before he dies, or before he has him actually killed, "Thy blood be upon thy head." In other words, your own blood's upon you, for thy mouth hath testified against thee, saying, "I have slain the Lord's anointed." In other words, if you'd just come up here and said, "I found these things, and I brought them to you," that would have been one thing. But you actually said, "I helped kill Saul. I slew him with my own sword. I finished him off, and I brought you these things." He says, your own mouth is testified against you. And David did this because to keep other kings and all from being killed by people when they get angry, he made it so the law says, if you kill a king or touch a king, you die quick. You have touched the Lord's anointed. And David lamented with a lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan and his sons. Also, he bade them to teach the children of Judah to use the bow. Now, these guys were good with swords and spears and stuff like that, but wait a minute, Saul got killed by a bow. The Philistines were experts with bows. After David takes over as king, the people of Judah are experts with bows. In fact, there's one place that says the Benjamites could shoot a bow with the left or the right hand equally as well, or sling a stone with the left or right hand equally as well. Judah learned to shoot the bow. They not only had their swords, they not only had their spears, but they also learned every weapon of warfare there was, because you never know how the battle's going to go. That's a general for you. Also, he bade them to teach the children of Judah to use the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Asher. And from what I studied today, that book of Asher could be in the book of Genesis, in the first books of the Bible, the Torah, where it talks about where Moses told him to teach the bow. We know that Jacob, just last week, first time I heard of it, Jacob had a bow and a sword. So not only did Jacob have a bow and a sword, but he says, now you teach all the people of Judah to use this bow and this sword. Then he starts lamenting, and he sings a song, and he says, "The beauty of Israel is slain." He held Saul up. He didn't kick him down while he was dead. He didn't abuse him while he was dead. He said, "That old Saul, he wasn't ever no good anyways." He says, the beauty of Israel is slain. No matter what kind of difference there was, David always had respect for Saul. "The beauty of Israel is slain. Upon thy high places, how art the mighty fallen?" He sung a song about the greatness of Saul and who he was and what he was. "Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ascalon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. You mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields or offspring, for there the shields of the mighty is likely to cast away." The shield of Saul, as though he has not been anointed with oil. In other words, you don't realize what y'all have touched. You don't realize what you have killed. You have cursed. He puts a curse on these folks because they have touched the Lord's anointed. He's lamenting over them, saying, "You have, in the Mount of Gilboa, let there be no dew. Let there be no rain upon you, nor field of offering, for there the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away, the shield of Saul, as though he has not been anointed with oil. In other words, y'all treated him like rubbish. You didn't even give it. Here is a king fallen, and you could have wrapped him up. You could have put him on a cart and sent him back to Israel, but instead you stripped him. You cut off his head. You hung him on a wall. You abused him. These were not things that David took with a kind feeling there. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives. In other words, he didn't say one single bad thing about any of these guys. He said these were brethren. These were members of our own people. These men were pleasant. These men were lovely. These men were valiant. These men were mighty. Contrary to what anybody may think about them, how wicked or evil he was, David did not bring them down. We said that something like this morning. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. If you ain't got nothing good to say, don't say nothing. So instead of not saying nothing, he says, these men were anointed. These men were mighty. These men were valiant. These men were God's men. He said Jonathan was lovely and pleasant in his lives. He loved Jonathan. And in their death, they were not divided. In other words, they died right there beside each other. The sons of Saul died within probably arm's reach or so of where Saul finally finished it up. Can you imagine if you see your sons? You can imagine why he wants to commit suicide. There's Jonathan, probably dead already. The other two sons, probably dead already. He could see them laying there. And he's grievously wounded. There's no fight left in him. Pleasant in their death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. Man, he's talking about these men and their valor and their strength. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul. Remember when they used to say, David slayed his 10,000, Saul his 1,000. Now he's saying, you weep over Saul. You mourn over Saul. You sang over Saul. This ain't my victory. We need to take care of this. You better mourn Saul and who he was and what he was. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you with scarlet. In other words, when he was king, he took care of you. He made sure you were defended. He made sure you had clothes to wear. He made sure you had stuff. Who clothed you with scarlet and other delights, who put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel. In other words, whenever he went out and won battles and stuff like that, he brought it back and he divided the spoils. How are the mighty fallen? How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thy high places. In other words, up on the top of the mountain, up where the high stuff takes place. Oh, Jonathan was slain on the top of the mountain, in the high places. And he says, I am distressed for thee. He loved him so. He loved his family. He loved everything about him. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. He acted just like Jonathan was his own flesh and blood. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. In other words, Jonathan, when David slew Goliath, he took off his royal apparel and he says, you are now part of the royal family. He took off his sword. He gave him a sword. He set him up just like he was part of the family, right there in the royal arena of the court of Saul. He says, I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been to me. Thy love to me was wonderful. And there are some people who will twist that into a bad thing, but that's not what that means. This man loved him with a man love, like no man can love a man. Wonderful. Passing the love of women. In other words, love of women, you've got kind of a lust thing going on, but he loved him because he was a man. A man's man. How art the mighty fallen? And the weapons of war perished. How art the mighty fallen? And this wraps up Saul. This wraps up Jonathan. Because if Jonathan had lived, there would have been contention. Because there may not have been a contention between Jonathan and David, because Jonathan knew who David was going to be. But you know, the people don't always go along with what God's got going on. And God in His sovereignty, knowing what would happen if Jonathan was alive, took Jonathan out of the picture. Good, bad, or ugly, no matter how we want to think about it, to get God's thing going in the right direction, sometimes people got to get out of the way. He loved Jonathan. Not a bad word, not an ugly word, not a coarse word. They never had an argument. Man, wouldn't it be great to have some friends that you never had an argument with? Now we start the kingdom of David. And it's not going to be all roses either. If anybody thinks that because David became king, now everything's going to be just great, we're going to have to read it.